You're listening to a repeat broadcast on 1030 The Voice.
Welcome to Inside Track. Santa Aurelia LLC is solely responsible for its content. The views and opinions expressed on Inside Track are those of the host and guests, and not necessarily endorsed by KVOI or its advertisers, but they should be. And now, here's Bruce Ash.
Hello, everyone, and a very pleasant good afternoon to you, wherever you may be. This is Bruce Ash welcoming you to this special pre-Christmas edition of Inside Track. I'm off for a few days. We have a best-of show for you today. We'll reprise the Bill Buckmaster career interview we did about a month or so ago. It was great to get Bill on the other side of the microphone, and we had a wonderful time learning about our friend who hosts the Buckmaster Show Monday through Fridays on KVOI from noon to 1 p.m. Bill loosens up a bit for us. We hope you'll listen in. Thanks for supporting all of our Inside Track sponsors: Imus Wilkinson Asset Management, Corazon Cabinets, and Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus. These are great local companies you should do business with. Speaking of great local companies you should do business with, Corazon Cabinets is your locally owned wholesale one-stop source for high-quality kitchen, bath, and office cabinets, as well as design services. Do you have a home improvement project planned for the upcoming new year? We sell quality J&K, Yorktown, and Conestoga cabinets, plus can offer a wealth of design resources for your home. Call Corazon Cabinets and schedule a visit to the showroom. Call 288-2266. Tell Jennifer or Joy you heard this ad with Bruce on Inside Track and get an additional 5% discount on their already low wholesale prices. Before we get to Bill, I want to share a few minutes of your time on my thoughts regarding the Democrats' impeachment scheme. The impeachment vote this week was not just an assault on the president and our constitutional republic. It was an attack on you, on me, and on all Americans, not just the ones who voted for the president, but for all Americans. Democrats have weaponized the process because they openly wanted the president impeached even before he started his term. For the third time in history, an American president has been impeached by the House of Representatives. For the very first time, however, the vote to impeach was completely along party lines. All of the votes to impeach were cast by Democrats. Besides the media high fives, what have they really accomplished? They have failed to persuade the country. They have set a new low standard for impeaching a president. Mr. Trump will easily be acquitted in the Senate. And Democrats may have helped Mr. Trump win re-election. Congratulations to the resistance. The impeachment process will also deride the GOP as either afraid of Donald Trump or moral sellouts. But note that even the 20 GOP members who are retiring from the House and not running for another office voted against impeachment. GOP members like Peter King, Jim Sensenbrenner, and Will Hurd have always been unafraid to break with the president in the past, and they weren't afraid here. The problem isn't GOP conscience. It's the weak and dishonest, undemocratic case for impeachment, and it's an obvious and dangerous hit on all Americans. They have used important terms like bribery, collusion, extortion in the hearings, but have now presented their weakened case of obstruction and abuse of power to the Senate. Democrats have pulled a legal bait and switch. Obscured by the vote this week was the FISA court rebuke of the dangerous and possibly illegal action taken by the FBI to get warrants to spy on the Trump campaign in the 16 campaign, as well as former FBI Director Comey's admission of mistakes made by the FBI, of course never actually implicating himself. Such a narcissist. How this debate will play out is impossible to predict, but note Mr. Trump's approval rating has been improving amid the impeachment debate, as well as his financial support. Support for impeachment hasn't increased. Removing Mr. Trump from office outside of an election won't banish Trumpism or reduce political polarization. Trump supporters rightfully see all of this business as a coup of the elites against the greatest political disruptor in the last 80 years or so. Democrats want to overrule the electorate's vote in 2016 and preempt the 2020 election. When Mr. Trump does win re-election, the folly of this Democrat impeachment will likely be a major reason. Hey, John, let's take our break, and when we come back, we'll have the Buckmaster interview. You're listening to Inside Track. Merry Christmas. We'll be right back.
As you know, I advertise restaurants where I eat and recommend services my family and I use ourselves. Our money issues are handled by Imus Wilkinson, 3561 East Sunrise, 777-1911. Most folks need a good financial advisor for more than one reason. Here's one of the best ones. They'll keep you from doing really stupid things with your investments and property. Remember when it seemed lots of people planned to get rich borrowing money on their house so they could buy another one? It's now called the housing bubble. I have friends, as do you, who lost their homes playing that game who would have been saved by decent financial advice like you get from Imus Wilkinson. They'll keep you from doing dumb stuff. They also can help you do smart things. Now, Imus Wilkinson doesn't make anything by churning your investments like too many others in the business do. They make money when you make money. Give them a call today at 777-1911. That's an easy number for most of this audience, 777-1911, and get an appointment to have Imus Wilkinson see if they can help you like they help my family and many others.
Jamie Kipper and her father, Gary Kipper, from Tucson Iron and Metal. What are they going to see when they come through the gates?
So when they come on in, they'll see our building up front. People have free rein to then go out and look in the yard. So it's not a typical scrapyard with a ton of big machinery. We have a couple of forklifts around, but that's about it, just to help move material. So when you come in, it's all organized by material, whether it's square tubing, angle iron, roofing, and then there is a pile in the back, which is still organized and easy to get through, but that's stuff that comes over from the scrap. So we're unique in that we get stuff in from the scrap, which a lot of artists and people will like or reuse, whether it's a sink that someone needs for their house. We sell literally anything made of metal.
Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus. Call 209-1579. Stop by the yard, 701 East 36th Street. Open Monday through Saturday.
The holidays are upon us, and 1030 The Voice is giving you a gift to get ready for a new year and a whole new decade.
Very cool.
Listen to the Dave Ramsey Show, weekdays from 1 to 4, for your chance to win a copy of Dave Ramsey's book, The Total Money Makeover, with over 20 years of financial teaching and counseling organized into 7 steps that will change your life forever.
Get your butt out of debt.
Listen to the Dave Ramsey Show, weekdays from 1 to 4, to learn how you can take home a copy of The Total Money Makeover.
Our mission is to help you.
Even if you're not planning to sleep outside under the stars or backpack into the wilderness, one thing's for sure. We all benefit from Arizona's public lands. Tourism and outdoor recreation in our parks, wildlife refuges, national forests, and monuments helps boost the local economy. It supports small business and generates jobs for Arizonans. Learn how you can help protect the treasure that's all around us at wilderness.org/Arizona.
Welcome back to Inside Track. This is Bruce. It's our pleasure to welcome back KVOY radio broadcaster Bill Buckmaster. Our listeners are pleased to hear you live on the weekend. We know that you exist on the weekends.
I am alive.
It's sort of unusual to be on this side of the microphone with you. I've had a devil of a time getting it back on the show. You're busy and, you know.
Still traveling.
So I hope we can get your story out here today. Is that a deal?
It's a deal. I'm ready to do it.
All right. So let's start with a question a little out of context. You have been a difficult interview to schedule, but who's been your most difficult interview to get through the years?
Oh, boy. I've had occasionally some people who, for whatever reason, don't want to go on the show. I would say that's very, very rare. May I say who one of them is?
Please.
Pima County Supervisor Allie Miller. I would love to have her back on the program. And apparently something was said. She believed that I did not address her as Supervisor Miller. I did the first time during the interview, certainly said Supervisor, but then perhaps one of the later references was just Mrs. Miller. And for whatever reason, she's been very difficult to get back on the show. So, Allie, if you're listening, come on. Let's get back on the program.
No, fair enough. Fair enough. I mean, you're a pretty fair guy.
Always. I try to be.
You know, so so that really is kind of part of your persona.
It is.
I mean, you're thought of as being a fair guy.
Yeah.
But probably sometimes you're listening to the other side of the microphone, you're thinking to myself, oh, my goodness. Who is this person I'm talking to? I don't expect you to share names, but sometimes difficult to interview people if you know that what they're saying is obviously like totally fallacious, totally out of bounds.
Yeah.
What have you done in situations like that?
I have always been of the belief, Bruce, that being nice, being polite, respectful, you will get more information during an interview than someone who takes the combative approach. Perhaps I'm in the minority in that way, but it has always been, in more than 50 years in the business, it's been my path to go down a path of dignity, honor, and respect, and let a person have their say. I then let the listeners make up their mind about what that person is saying. That's generally my philosophy as I approach an interview, that I believe that whoever's on this side of the mic, and there have been some people that have been termed kind of maybe wackos that have sat on the other side of me. And
any wackos you can talk about?
I'd rather not say, but
one
of them ran for Congress repeatedly.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah, you remember. And we did it on TV. And at least a
this wasn't the dumpster diver, was it?
He is no longer with us, so I would not like to bring up his name. But he was the Republican nominee, won the primary.
Yes, I remember that.
I think
he sued me
yeah.
for defamation of character.
Well, I guess he can't.
After I accused,
but maybe his descendants can.
Saying who he is.
No.
But let me tell you the funny thing about it. So he sued me for defamation of character, and I referred to him as a jailhouse lawyer because he did have lawyer skills. He never graduated from law school, and he kept filing these briefs, to keep the case going after he lost every single motion he made. And finally, after spending, I think, close to $15,000 to defend myself because I couldn't just let it go.
Sure.
He would have won an award against me, and he would have been able to collect against me, unfortunately. Yeah. The day that I heard from my lawyer that all of his appeals were finally exhausted, they took it to the appeals court in the state of Arizona. He died.
Oh boy. Yeah.
So anyway, there you go.
But anyway, he was a perennial candidate, and I always treated him like he was like he deserved respect. And yet, the reason I did that, Bruce, he was duly elected to move on. He had won a primary and had a constituency for whatever reason. I think of those people when I do interviews that somebody said, I like this guy. I'm going to, vote for them. And then they've moved on in the process. And I have always tried to give everybody a fair shake. Mm.
So sometimes things just happen.
Yeah.
In 1979, you interviewed one of the Iranian hostage takers during that international crisis. First of all, how were you able to pull that off? How did that happen?
Well, let's go back, because I think our first session that we did together, and I enjoyed that very much, was kind of early in my career and how in Las Vegas and how I even wound up in San Jose at this all-new talk station. A friend of mine was the news director and said, Bill, why don't you come up to the Bay Area, leave Las Vegas. This was early in 79, and you will have free reign as the morning host on our all-news talk station. Morning guy, I don't care where you call. If it's in the news, I don't care about the phone bill. Mm-hmm. We're on.
Would you just call the embassy in Tehran?
No, we actually... We actually had a connection through the Persian or the Iranian community that got us in on the phone line. And I believe we were certainly one of a handful of the first people, first American reporters, to talk to the one of the hostage takers. And
so how did that conversation go? What did he say?
When are you going to release our Americans?
And then what did they say to you?
What did they say to me? They started in on the whole bit. What they were doing, the oppression of the Shah, and on it went. And, you know, same old stuff. But I was more concerned with talking to this guy and saying, look, okay, you made your point. You took our people. You've gotten tremendous publicity. Let's move on. Let's just go on. Let's let these people go. And you've made your point. You know, you're not winning points by every day you're holding these people.
That's proven,
certainly.
Right.
But that was the approach that I was taking. But that was a fun job, even though, you know, here I gave up really a great gig in Las Vegas working for NBC Radio and the morning man at the NBC radio station in Las Vegas for a bit over 5 years, covered all the Howard Hughes, the death of Hughes, the thing over the Howard Hughes will, or maybe it wasn't a will. But I gave up that job because this friend said, this is really tempting. And, you know, I was at the point in my career, I still was under 30, I believe. I wanted to move up to a bigger market and to the Bay Area. So the job only lasted 9 months. And suddenly the station went all automated and I went to music or something. And for the first time in my career, I was out of work. And luckily, I landed on my feet. The only time I have been out of work in some 50 years, I was only out of work for 2 weeks. I didn't like the feeling, but I was on the air on TV 2 weeks after I was out of a job on radio. I was on TV in San Francisco.
So besides the obvious differences, you know, on radio, nobody sees you. On TV, people do see you.
Completely different.
What are the differences between broadcasting on radio and broadcasting on TV? Because you've done both for a considerable period of time.
Yeah, and it's so different. Radio is all about sound. Painting pictures, television. I hate to say this, but people are not listening that carefully, Bruce, to what you are saying. They are looking at, do you have any, you have a pimple on your face? Is your hair not right? Or they really like your tie. I can't tell you how many comments I got over the years about ties. And I've still got a closet full of them because, when I left Channel 6 at the end of 2010, I've worn a tie a couple of times. That's it. In 9 years.
The last time you wore a tie?
You know, I knew you were going to say that. And I was just thinking in advance. I think it was when we went up to Las Vegas in 2016 to accept...
Yeah.
At the Four Seasons Hotel in Las Vegas to accept the honor of the Nevada Broadcasters Hall of Fame. And I was really honored to be getting that because it is rare. One of the criteria is you have to work in a market 5 years, and I think I was there and maybe a couple of days, but still to be remembered for my work. But that may have been the last time that I wore a tie, but I've still got some ties.
So getting back to the Vegas days,
yes.
Tell the listeners about the Sinatra publicity story.
Did we talk about that?
No,
the last
we didn't.
Time?
That's why I'm bringing it up now.
Oh my goodness! I wish I had my scrapbook in front of me because that's one of the things that
it was a publicity stunt that kind of went plooey.
It was
and you jumped on it.
It was a publicity stunt that the Las Vegas Visitors Bureau had put together some kind of phony award to give to Sinatra, and a couple of my friends, we got together, one from the TV side and one from radio, and we thought, why don't we go backstage? We had a few connections. Let's get backstage at Caesars and see if we can talk to Frank about, what's going on. Is this, here you're getting this so-called dummy award. It was for something that I don't even remember what it was, but we did manage to get to the dressing room, and Frank was just finishing, I don't know if it was the late set or the second show, but anyway, he came and he said, what the heck is this, what's going on with these people?
I guess it wasn't heck.
No, I can't say, but you know what it was. Get these people out of here now. So myself and there was a woman TV reporter, I think there was one other person, but we were physically dragged out of the premises. And it made the wire services, and it was kind of fun.
Sometimes it's fun to be in the middle of the news cycle. Sometimes it's not so fun to be in the middle of the news cycle.
I tell you, that time in Las Vegas, I was at the perfect storm of this, how Las Vegas was transitioning from
the mob?
Yes, which ran the town and ran the casinos.
What year was this?
This was 1973 to 79. Approximately early 74 is when I got there, and I left in 79. So I was there for 5 years. But I always tell people, if you want to know what it was like during that period, that 5 year period, take a look at the movie with De Niro, Casino.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. That was my time in Las Vegas. Bodies turning up in the desert, like almost every day, and it was like I termed it. You've heard of the Bermuda Triangle. Mm-hmm. I termed it. It was the Desert Triangle because people were just like disappearing. People were being blown up. Car bombs, and I hate to say this, but I did check under my car. There was a period in Las Vegas where the first thing I did was go down on one knee and look under the car. I've never shared that story before, but that's how strange things were.
So were you disappointed that you didn't find anything?
I don't know.
Geez, hey, maybe I'm not worth it?
Yeah. But that was interesting.
So you also were the person who broke the news about Howard Hughes' death.
I did. Told that at least to the NBC radio listeners. That was the news that Howard Hughes had died. And that just that changed Las Vegas forever. Howard Hughes and his Summa Corporation, I don't want to say owned everything, but they owned
damn close to it.
Let's put it this way. They owned the assets that kept the wheel running. And so when he died, everything was like suddenly in play. All that real estate was Summa, and especially since now the Summa Corporation didn't think there was a will, then a wheel turned up. Melvin Dumar, a gas station operator in southern Utah, claimed that this mysterious guy dropped off a will, which became known as the Mormon Will, was litigated in one of the, it was the OJ trial of its time. It was the big story. Whether, you know, Hughes had the will, eventually, you know, it was tossed out. But again, a movie for reference for that one. Jason Robards in Melvin and Howard, that tells the story about the Dumar and the will. Really good movie.
Hey, let's go ahead. Let's take this time to take a break and hear from our sponsors. And when we come back with Bill, we'll hear about that transition eventually to Tucson, Arizona. So you listen Inside Track. Stay with us. Right back. Customers come first at Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus.
A lot of the cities and the counties around have initiatives for artists. I think we're one of the premier artist suppliers for steel. First Saturday of every month, you can come down early and actually go through the scrap yard across the street. It's 7 acres of metal. You can walk through with our people and pick out what you want. It's always interesting to see what the artists have done. We've done actually a couple projects with the U of A engineering department and music department, where the engineering music students came down together. They had to pick something out of the scrap, and they had to build an instrument. And we have one of those in front of the plant. Some really cool things come out of the scrap.
Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus. Call 209-1579. Stop by the yard, 701 East 36th Street. Open Monday through Saturday.
The Humane Society of Southern Arizona reminds pet owners to make sure their pets are protected during the summer months. Make sure your pets have plenty of fresh water and access to get indoors and out of the heat. If you are walking your dog, touch the sidewalk or pavement first. If it's too hot for you to touch for 5 seconds, it's too hot for your animal. Walk them early in the morning or late in the evening to avoid painful burns on their paws. Get more info on the Humane Society of Southern Arizona at hssaz.org.
I was searching for a way to stop using drugs. I reached out and found Narcotics Anonymous. I went to my first NA meeting and didn't know what to expect. Supported by recovering addicts, I realized that I was not alone. I heard them talk about feelings that I was afraid to talk about. And recovery from drug addiction, something I was afraid to dream about. It is possible to stop using drugs.
Call Narcotics Anonymous. We can help. 881-8381. That's 881-8381.
All right, we're back. Inside Track, we're here with Bill Buckmaster, most trusted voice for news in Tucson. Before he came to Tucson, we're talking about Las Vegas, you covered a couple of the Ali fights.
Let's see, the first one I covered, I had just arrived in town, might have been like 1975. It was at the Las Vegas Convention Center, Muhammad Ali defending his crown against a guy by the name of Ron Lyle. Oh. This guy was a puncher. He had served time in, I believe, the Colorado Penitentiary. This guy was, as they say, prison hardened, and this was going to be a slugfest, and it was to a certain extent. But Ron Lyle came at Ali with just street stuff, and Ali finessed his way. Ron was punching, and Ali, you know how he's
floating like a butterfly, stung like a bee.
Well, there it was, and so, you know, Ron got tired, and then, boop, knockout punch. So that was, and then the second fight was the big one, and that was the one of the highlights, I think, one of the most exciting things I've ever covered. I was working for NBC. People don't realize that. They think Ted Turner, oh, yeah, he started all news broadcasting. Not true. NBC in the mid-70s did an experiment called News and Information Service, NIS, and it was a 24-hour news service on radio. relying heavily on NBC affiliates in this country and their correspondents around the world. Well, I was turning out a lot of material from Las Vegas for NIS, and I covered the fight in February 1978 at the Hilton Hotel ringside for NBC Radio. Had the phone right there at the desk right there ringside. Now the problem is the noise level was this was Ali fighting against Leon Sphinx, who was going to upset Ali in a decision, went 15 rounds, but it was so noisy. And NBC was saying, we're going to break the network. In those days, they would interrupt the radio network with a big bulletin. We're going to interrupt regardless on the outcome here. Because I had been saying a lot, talking to New York and saying, I think there's an upset coming here. Mm-hmm. This is big.
Yeah.
So they said, we're going to break the network. And I said, I'm going to go under the table. The noise was deafening. You're going to have to shout, go as loud as you possibly can for me to hear it. Because the place was going just crazy. Muhammad Ali had been upset by this unknown from Easton, Pennsylvania, Leon Sphinx. In a decision, Ali goes down. It was a huge story. What an exciting night that was in February of 1978 at the Las Vegas Hilton. Loved it.
You were there.
I was
so
there.
You're a sports guy too, sort of.
Yeah, and that was what was fun about this this all news thing. I covered sports on weekend, mainly weekends for them. Jimmy Connors, remember Connors, the tennis player?
Sure.
Did all these challenge matches, one-on-one deals over at Caesar's Palace. I don't know how many.
Did you do the Billie Jean King?
Yeah, I did that, and I did the tennis things and
Bobby Riggs, right?
Yeah. So I was doing the tennis, the boxing, and whatever the big events were in Las Vegas, I was there.
But for local people here in Tucson and throughout Southern Arizona, you're largely known for a 20-plus year run at
22 years.
KUAT hosting Arizona Illustrated. You develop the format.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us what brought you to the broadcast and why what you did there was so special?
Well, it was kind of interesting. I was... after I left the All News Radio in San Jose, I went to a financial TV show, believe it or not. I was doing, this is actually an interesting part of who my co-anchor was. This was 1980, late 79, 80. I'm co-anchoring with a guy by the name of Stuart Varney.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. Jeez. And so Stuart and I are on TV in the mornings doing this financial show, co-hosting. And so one day after breakfast, after the show, going to breakfast, we'd go out to breakfast, Stuart says, hey, Bill, I've been offered this job with this guy named Ted Turner. I said, who the heck is that? Well, he's got this, he's been in the Atlanta market for a while, and he's been doing a lot of stuff there for years, but he's going to launch this all-news TV thing called CNN, and they want me to be the financial guy. What do you think I should do? Do you think I should take it, or is it too risky? I said, you got to take it. Do it. So Stuart went on, and then, left CNN,
but you've had a pretty good gig here in Tucson. You did Arizona Illustrated.
I did,
and you really developed it.
I did
into the format we've known it for so many years.
So I was in San Jose at KICU. We're doing the news at 10. That's after I left the financial show with Stuart Varney. My sister-in-law, who lives here in town, called us and said, hey, Channel 6, PBS, just got rid of their anchor man, and you and Ann have talked about wanting to come back to Tucson, because Ann and I met here, both of us went to the University of Arizona, on and on. And so I thought, well, yeah, maybe. So I called my friend Hector Gonzalez, who was the producer of the show, Arizona Illustrated at the time. I said, I'm anchoring the news in San Francisco. He goes, whoa, first of all, I cannot afford to bring an anchor in.
No, that's always the first thing one of these guys says.
I cannot afford to bring a television anchor from San Francisco.
No, I can be bought pretty cheap.
And then I said, let's don't even talk money for a while here. Let's just talk about who I am, what I'd like to do, and lifestyle. So that went on, believe it or not. We talked for about 6 months, and finally, he said, yeah, let's do this. And so my first show was the first week of January in 1988 at Channel 6. And one of the great things was that pretty much I had carte blanche working with Hector to develop what we wanted to do with Arizona Illustrated. And my thinking was, let's do a show where if there's a segment, keep the segments to 5 to 8 minutes, so the public will begin to know that if you don't like a segment, stick around. There's more to come. You know, we kind of cram in 3 or 4 different topics, and that's kind of what I've carried over to the radio show that I do here on KVOI, that a segmented approach that, you know, fill it up with 10 to 12-minute segments. But anyway, I had a great run at Channel 6.
So what do you think your secret for longevity has been in broadcasting? Because lots of people come and go.
Yeah, they do. And I think we talked earlier in the program about that philosophy of being someone that's open to listen and really respects when someone's on this side of the mic, where I am, the guest seat, to honor that person as an individual who has strong beliefs. And to them, they're doing what they believe is right. And I think that under the First Amendment, people should have a right to say what's on their mind. And I think I've survived because people perceive me as being a fair person.
So looking at that nationally, who do you look at nationally and respect for those same values?
Boy, that's a tough one. I can tell you who I used to respect and who I...
Okay, tell us who you used to respect.
As a kid that I kind of modeled myself after was Walter Cronkite. But I don't know. I don't know who jumps out right now of somebody on a national level.
So I saw a picture of you on your website, the Bill Buckmaster website.
Buckmastershow.com.
Right. Mm-hmm. With Dan Rather.
Yes.
Now, he looked rather inebriated in that photograph, was he?
Yeah. That is really a bizarre story, what happened. Gosh, this was... I'm kind of glad you brought that story up, because that's kind of fun.
I thought I was going to make you mad by bringing it up.
No. We were in... the main island, in the Galapagos Islands, and we're at the hotel there, and my wife says to me, that looks like Dan Rather. I said, my goodness, it is Dan Rather. This was like 2008. He'd left CBS and he was, working, doing documentaries. I think he's still doing some of that stuff. But anyway, he was doing a documentary on the Galapagos Islands. So we did have a chance to have a glass of wine and talk a little bit and get a picture. That was a fun evening.
Yeah.
So who of all the places that you would think run into Dan Rather.
So who have your mentors been? Either that you've admired from afar or those that you've worked with or known that have been your mentors, and what lessons did they teach you?
There is I would say right off the top, a mentor, and he's not in the broadcasting business, but he is someone I met here in Tucson at Channel 6, and it's the retired United States Army Chief of Staff, General John Wickham. And I first met General Wickham. He would come in to the TV show on Channel 6 and do some commentary for us, and I got to know him very well and respect him. I cannot believe this man is 91 years old.
He's in pretty good shape.
Oh, my goodness. He's still
cycles, and he's pretty lucid.
But he's at the top of my mentor list and of people I respect. You know, he was given up for dead. There's a movie that Mel Gibson played in, We Were Soldiers Once. It's not specifically, he's not playing the role of Wickham, but what happened to General Wickham was very similar to what happened in that movie. General Wickham, his unit was completely surrounded. They fought a firefight that went on like 36 hours. General Wickham was wounded in 12 places, given the last rites. He insisted he would be the last person airlifted out.
Off the battlefield.
Yeah. He has injuries, war injuries to this day that give him pain. And he works through it, goes out on his bicycle. He's got one of those three-wheeler things.
Yeah, yeah.
He's now transitioned to that, but he's still trying to exercise. And we have him on the radio show once, first Monday of each month. And I can't believe how sharp he is still. So that's kind of a mentor I have. And as far as mentors in the business, I have felt like I've been more on the other side of mentoring other people, young people.
So like who?
Savannah Guthrie, who worked with me for 4 years at Channel 6. She came in as a freshman, spent all 4 years with
us. Does she still remember you?
Oh, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, we still keep in touch on Facebook and things like that. Another person I'm very proud of that goes back to Las Vegas days is now the White House correspondent for the Voice of America, Steve Herman.
That's your friend, yeah.
Somebody that President Trump, believe it or not, he calls on Steve during every when they do have news conference. I think he calls on him because he really respects him. Steve plays it right down the line. I'd like to say I taught him that. Well, I did. I think I taught him a little of it because I hired him in Las Vegas when he was still a kid. I think he was 18 or 19 years old. And, I think I had an influence on him. And so I'm real proud of Steve and what he has accomplished with the Voice of America. So, you know, I'm proud of some of those mentoring.
Okay. So anybody who's been doing this for, I don't want to upset you, but for half a century.
Yeah. 52 years.
Okay.
67.
There's obviously 51. A Bill Buckmaster blooper reel someplace. What, as you look back, is there any like particular blooper, any like big mistake? I mean, I'm just doing this little dinky radio show.
Let's say
I've had plenty of them.
Let's say, remember Yasser Arafat?
Yeah.
Well, take that last name. There's a blooper there. I'd rather not say it on the radio, but that was one of them. And I did some. You cannot be in front of a microphone for this many years and have some really stupid, say some stupid things.
One thing that
nothing that would get me in trouble with the FCC.
No. Anybody could say that.
Yeah.
Right? One thing in terms of your voice, I listen to you very, very closely, and there's a certain, you have a smile in your voice. And I think that's very rare, particularly for a news guy.
Yeah.
Is that something that is just instinctive? I mean, is that part of your personality?
Can I tell you, I think, where that comes from?
Yeah, that's why I'm asking it.
I listened as a kid. First of all, I listened to what really got me going. My dad had a shortwave radio set, and I would play with that. But what I did is, I was a big baseball fan early on as a kid. And at night in Chicago, I was able to get a lot of out-of-town stations, WBZ, Boston. Listening to Boston Red Sox, and of course in Chicago, listening to Jack Brickhouse on radio and TV. These were people, and I noticed, I used to play throw the ball against the wall and be an imaginary baseball announcer, but I noticed that these great announcers, Vince Scully, for one, had that, what I call, smile tone.
There was sparkle.
Sparkle. Yeah. That's a good way to put it. A sparkle to their, to that tone. Mm-hmm. And a lightness. Even though the voice had good resonance, but there was that kind of light feeling to it that made you feel comfortable.
So it's really is about making people comfortable as they're listening to you,
exactly,
which helps them digest what you, what you're saying,
exactly,
right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's a huge thing.
Yeah.
So earlier you were talking about being on the radio on your show, painting a picture.
Yes.
You also paint.
I don't anymore.
Oh, I thought you did.
No. No.
You used to paint.
Well, a little bit. Yeah. But it just wasn't good enough.
Okay. So much for that picture.
Yeah. But I have, through the years, taken a lot of photographs. At one time, I was very much into photography. You know, and I was thinking about the photography, and we were talking about Las Vegas and how it changed over the years. My father was head of the Chicago Restaurant Association, so I remember he had some buddies out in Las Vegas. This would have been when I was at the University of Arizona in the late 60s. Dad said, why don't you fly up to Las Vegas, you know, we'll see some shows and all this. I said, great, well, I'll bring my camera. Well, he knew some people over at Circus Circus, and I said, I would love to go up above in your security, the eye thing, and take pictures. Yeah, no problem. Can you imagine?
Those are the days.
Can you imagine that getting anywhere near the eye in the sky these days? I've still got those pictures. They're pretty darn good from up there, looking at the dealer handing out his, you know, it was just really, really good, but how times change.
So, Bill, where do you get your news? Where do you listen? Where do you look? Where do you read? Where do you pick up your news?
Well, I look at the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Arizona Daily Star. I look at a lot of stuff on the internet. I don't watch TV news very much anymore. I think that you have to be so careful as a news consumer these days about what you are digesting on social media. And I know that Facebook's trying to put that little, eye that they put up there when there's a news story, like where that is coming from. And that's helpful, but you do have to really take it with a grain of salt, a lot of this stuff. But I do try to get a big picture on the news.
So there obviously is this huge battle between the news media and the president,
mm-hmm.
fake news and all the things that go with it. What's your view of fake news?
Fake news would be something that isn't true. If it's not true, if it's not factual, I'd say it's fake. That would be my standard.
So what's your tolerance for people who you know, based upon your understanding of news events, are broadcasting or writing, and they're obviously saying a different story than what really happened?
Hmm. Just glad it's not me.
I think we're going to conclude there today.
You. That'd be a good way to conclude.
Yeah. Well, a guy who's definitely not fake news, has been fake news, never will be fake news. It's Bill Buckmaster. And as we conclude today, please vote for Ed Ackerley. the three Republican nominees for city council, vote no on the Sanctuary City, and continue to support all of our great Inside Track sponsors, Imus Wilkinson Asset Management, Corazon Cabinets, and Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus. These are really great locally owned, family-run companies you should do business with. I have had a lot of fun, Bill. I hope you have, Eb.
It's been great. Thank you so much.
Participate in this today. And as somebody who has been around you, you have always treated me fairly. I haven't always been the easiest guest to deal with.
We've had
a few interesting times together.
Yeah, we have.
In fact, right in this building once, mm-hmm. I recall, mm-hmm. fondly or not too fondly. But you are a true professional, and I consider you a friend.
Thank you.
Thank you very, very much for telling your story and giving us some insights into yourself.
Thanks for letting me do it.
Until next week for Inside Track, this is Bruce Ash and Eb Wilkinson, and wishing all of you a very pleasant good afternoon.